Spit the place up for $1,500 back in 1960.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome to Raised in Wisco. This can take me a while to get my voice back and be able to talk all right. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman on 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw. Man. You know, last week we were preempted by a basketball game, and before that, I was literally in Europe, hunting in Europe.
Having the time of your life.
Oh my gosh, Danielle, I have to tell you, that was one of the most incredible experiences I have ever had. So many people, I mean, and look, bottom line is, if you're going to take a look at the world and the state of Wisconsin, we have some of the greatest resources in the world to hunt and fish in Wisconsin. We're surrounded by the Great Lakes. We've got the Mississippi River, more inland lakes than Minnesota. That's right. I know we didn't make the playoffs, but neither did Minnesota. So we've got real opportunities here in the state of Wisconsin. But something that I think people do, and I've been using this line a lot lately, and that is, life's about experiences, not things.
It definitely is.
You know, and I'm going to throw this out there. I saved for 3 years to be able to take my family to Europe. And
such an epic trip, though. I cannot believe those pictures that I posted on Facebook, go on his Facebook, Joel Clayfish, on Facebook, and see all these pictures. It's what, 50, 60 pictures of just you and your family having the time of your life? And then you met your grandpa's?
Yeah.
Your grandparents?
Wow, I can't believe you remember that. We actually, it was unbelievable. We flew into Naples, Italy, and drove across the entire country to Valenzano, Italy, which is a suburb of Bari. Met my grandfather. Now, here's the trippy part about it. My grandfather fought in World War I. My grandpa, just my mom's dad. Not World War II. World War I. He'd be like 137 if he was alive. He was from Bari, Italy, or Valenzano, and he came to the United States when he was 16 years old and fought for the United States back in Italy during World War I, and that was back when they were our allies. Came back here, lived the American dream, had 12 kids with my grandma, and my mom's one of those. And by the way, my mom says she's listening tonight.
Hello,
and
Mom.
My mom is kind of an auditor, so if I got anything wrong about that story, she's going to call me after and tell me.
I hope she does.
I'm just warning you. So shout out to Mom for actually remembering to turn the show on tonight. And, of course, shout out to the Kennedy clan.
Of course.
Our loyal listeners out in Oconomowoc. John Then's listening too. He's starting a cattle company in Wyoming.
A cattle company?
Well, I was just showing you those pictures from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm, you were.
With the deer and the mule deer and the elk. And so now we got to figure a way to get out there.
Yeah.
But my whole point about this, if life's about experiences, you're never going to be on your deathbed and say, I'm glad I did not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were going to Europe, I figured out a way. I schemed and connived to be able to hunt out there and hunted some of the craziest of fallow deer, which was just beautiful, but
yeah, the vampire deer.
But we hunted Chinese water buck, which is a deer. It's literally a cervid deer species with fangs. So if you have a chance, look up Chinese water buck. You can hunt them in certain counties in the UK. They were brought over in the 1700s, and they escaped from an enclosure during a flood. What? And now it's like, it's crazy. Because there's not many people who hunt in, you know, greater United Kingdom and England.
Oh, there's that? I don't know this.
Well, comparatively. Oh. I mean, you got 600,000 hunters in Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin's about the size of the UK, maybe a little smaller. But over there, there's maybe 20 or 30,000 people who hunt compared to 600,000.
So the wildlife has to be...
It's insane.
Rocking out
the
there.
The cool part is, you know what? I'm going to bring him in. I was just going to tell this story and then introduce Jake Kaprill. Jake Kaprillion is with us today. And I met the guy before. I'm super excited that he's here on the show. He runs Epic Guide Service. And this is a guy after our own heart here at Raised in Wisco. He combines the best of all the things Wisconsin into multi year-long effort. The guy's out hunting snow geese. He's hunting ducks and geese in the fall. And then he's fishing for monster fish. He does the Great Lakes fishing, inland fishing, bass fishing, musky fishing.
Not
you name
ice
it.
Fishing, though.
Nope.
No, ice he's fishing. Not a hard water fisherman.
Nope. That's the off season.
I think you said you'd rather go to the bar than sit on the ice and freeze and drink.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people I know, they're ice drinkers. I mean, if they're ice fishing, they're having drinks between
tip
ups.
How else are you supposed to play
Disney?
Yeah,
you stay warm, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess. Whatever it takes, but welcome to the show. I'm psyched you came because you are pretty much the quintessential example of what Wisconsin is if you are trying to make a living in the outdoor industry. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people dream of that, but I think a lot of people don't realize the amount of work that goes into it. So I'm going to wrap up this the Europe stuff, but I want to talk about those vampire deer for a second. Because you want to talk about crazy. I mean, You're hunting these things, and they're Chinese water bucks, so they're in Asia, and then they're in a few counties in the UK, and that's it in the whole world. Huh. And so where I went, it was one of these counties, and I went with Sam Sumner, and Sam Sumner is Stalker Sam is his nickname.
Stalker Sam.
In the UK and in the countries over there, they do a ton of stalking versus, they call them high seats.
Mm-hmm.
Stand, you know, sitting in a stand, as they call it, high seat.
Huh.
They don't sit Makes a lot sense. In high seats or in tree stands because for some reason, since there are fewer hunters, the animals there are not, they don't all automatically feel like they're prey. They don't feel like there's someone after them all the time. They feel like they are, I mean, they're just animals, and they'll see people from here and there. They don't have like freak out mentality when they see a person. And that is an incredible place to hunt in because you actually get to hunt something that isn't automatically hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And a stalking type of hunt, man, that's how our ancestors did it. That's how the Native Americans did it. There was no like sitting in a tree. It was
and just sitting and waiting. You actually have to go out and look for them.
You're on hardwood edges on the edge of fields, hoping something pokes out while you're kind of making your way along. It's completely something I'm not used to or I'm not good at. I'm like this big oafy fat dude stumbling through the woods, you know. But I'm telling you what, that was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had stalking that fallow deer and stalking. So when you try to hunt these water buck. They have fangs. Look them up. Go on
the
internet.
Water buck.
Chinese water buck.
That's what I was
doing. Chinese water deer.
Yeah,
Chinese
I was Googling
Asian
that when you
deer.
Were talking about that. And they're so tiny. They're like the size of a dog.
They're the size of like a big, I'd say, I don't know.
Tiny llamas.
Like, I'd say they're about the size of a big German short hair pointer.
They're
like
so
a big
cute.
One. Okay. Danielle,
what?
You're not helping the cause.
What?
They're
okay,
cute
hold on. Is
with their
help?
Fangs?
Yes. It makes them different. I want to shoot different things. They look so...
They're
you
so
have to,
cool.
Everybody that is listening, Google Chinese water deer. And it's... I now want one.
Have you ever
How
heard of these before, Jacob?
I have heard of them. Yeah, I've seen them. But I've never hunted them.
They're outstanding.
Are they?
They're absolutely outstanding. And it's venison. And they've got these, so they have Chinese water deer, and they measure them by the fangs. So the bigger the fang, and it's a measurement of length and width of the fangs, and they have bronze, silver, and gold class.
Oh.
So you can, and they've got like a Chinese water deer society in the United Kingdom. And the one that I got, the first one I got had these little tiny fangs, and the second one I got had these massive fangs, and it's a gold medal. I mean,
that's cool.
How cool is it to go on your first trip
and
shoot a gold medal water deer? I mean, I have to be honest. Before that, I had no idea what a gold medal water deer was.
I didn't even know they did that.
Me either. Is that your first gold medal
well,
ever in life? I've never received a gold medal.
I have a Boone Crockett all-time pronghorn. So I'd put that in gold medal category, I guess. But as far as like trophies, see, and people have this argument, and Jake, I want to hear your opinion of this too. People have this argument that, I'm QDM and big antlers and big fangs and big fish and is about, and banded birds is about the trophy. To me, anything you harvest that ends up on a dinner plate is a trophy. Anything you harvest period is a trophy because it's a creation that's unique in its own perspective.
Definitely. I think, I mean, the older you get too, I think the more you appreciate the experience of the hunt more than just the kill too, mm-hmm. you know, leading up to it and everything with it. So.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And that's what we were kind of talking about before the show is when you hunt in a different country, you are experiencing the culture of that country, mm-hmm. The food of that country, the camaraderie, the different way people interact. Mm-hmm. Because in different countries, people even interact differently. Even in an English country, England, they speak English, but it's a different English. Yep. And things are, if something's awesome over there, it's brilliant. Which is just so cool. There's like these proper words for cool things that we say all the time. But, oh, brilliant shot. Can I go back to the United States and tell people my shot was brilliant?
Yes,
that
you can.
Wasn't just a great shot. It was brilliant.
We could bring that here. I would definitely bring that here.
I've been starting to say it's brilliant. Like then they'll say like, is everything sorted? Everything's sorted. And it's just, oh, it's so fun. It's so cool. And even
I cannot wait to travel.
The France hunt was so cool too with the fallow deer. And we had actually seen a red stag while we were out. And that was crazy because that was on the estate of King Louis XIV.
Oh, yeah, those pictures.
Yeah, how big was that estate?
It was insane. 700 acres.
Okay.
King Louis built a castle to Madame de Maintenon, who was his wife, the Queen of France. That was like her vacay castle. Her vay castle.
Yeah. I'm going to get away for the weekend.
Could you imagine? Bro, I'm a little tired of Versailles and the 8,000 rooms we have here. I need to go to Reims, have myself some champagne, and stay at the Vay Castle. And so, like, the sun's coming up. I'm like, what is that building? He's like, well, that was built for the Queen of France. I'm like, are you
La-ti-da.
Freaking kidding me?
That's brilliant.
And it's like, there's no fence. It's not high fence or anything like that. Because you know what? There's, like, old, like crumbling walls around.
Yeah, there are a lot of stone.
Walls everywhere and stone. And the animals, so what they do when they hunt out there, they literally make habitat that is so desirable for the deer and animals that they want to be there. And then you're taking away this aspect of them being pressured and pursued all the time. And it just makes for hunting heaven. And so that, if you're not going to be on your deathbed and say, I'm glad I didn't do it, all you got to do, the first step, every time, get on the internet, book that flight, book that trip, book that ticket, put it down, get that thing paid for. By the time you take it, you're going to have that credit card paid off. Go and hunt. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisconsin. Welcome back, Wisconsin. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman on 540 AM, WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw, right in the Fishbowl, downtown Waukesha, 217 Wisconsin Avenue. Swing by and say hey to Danielle and me. We are,
hello.
You know, I've lived a lot of my life in a fishbowl, so
to call,
well, metaphorically.
Yeah. Oh, really? Although you didn't actually live in a fishbowl?
Well, I am a clay fish.
Oh, oh my gosh.
You didn't even think of that,
really?
Did you? I can't help it. I mean, there are very few.
You're such a dad joke. That was such a dad joke.
You know how you catch a clay fish?
Oh, my gosh.
When you're ice fishing, you put a chicken wing down the hole.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, sure. Oh, with her Wisconsin accent, she says, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Jacob Caprillion, Epic Guide Service, is joining us. He probably just thinks, he's like, what have I gotten myself into here?
Oh, wait, you got to give everybody the phone number so they can call. And he has buddies that want to call and give him crap.
Do you have buddies listening?
If
Caprillion's buddies are out there listening.
844-967-2789. And you can find us on Facebook Live on WAUK Facebook.
You might regret saying that.
844-967-2789. 2789, Caprillion's buddies, call in and give them the business while we're on the air. What are you doing right now? Because right now, Wisconsin's last hunting season, turkey hunting, just ended on the 8th.
Sunday.
On Sunday. So we've got the only thing open right now, I think Crow is open.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything right now. And I'm catching up on life.
Yeah, because you hit it hard once the hunting season. When does the hunting season start for you? Spring snow goose?
Yeah, my spring snow goose hunts, I start February 1st. So I leave, you know, maybe a week or so ahead of time before that and pretty much run that through and come home and start fishing and fish all summer, pretty much 7 days a week. And that runs right into duck season. And duck season runs through, you know, the beginning of December. And this is my... I get about maybe a month, month and a half, you know, off time or downtime between seasons. And that's kind of where we're at right now. So family time and catch up on, you know, business life and everything else. And, you know, working on equipment basically nonstop. So
is this all you do? I mean, for an income, you do outdoor 24/7 for your income.
That's fantastic. That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant.
it's starting.
Brilliant.
Wow, this is such a great episode. Those are good dad
Danielle,
jokes.
What are you drinking before the show?
No, I'm just a happy person.
Okay, good. Well, it's nice to see. It's good to see. Danielle made these awesome hats. If you check us out on Facebook, you'll see she made these Raisin Wisco hats on camouflage. And they are, like, you could use them hunting, too, because, like, the logo on the front isn't all bright and stuff, you know?
I tried.
They're really cool. I really like it. Thank you. No, thank you for making them. That's awesome.
I was going to give it to you before Christmas, but you were gone.
I thought the station owner might have made these for us, but... But I will wait from him to get our Raised in Wisco sweat hoodies and other bling.
I could go for one, a nice vest.
Yeah, that would be sweet.
Yeah.
So, Jacob, where do you hunt? Where are you hunting snows mainly?
We hunt Arkansas most of the time. So that's the only hunts that I do that are out of state right now. Obviously, Wisconsin has no snow goose population, so...
I see an occasional snow goose.
Every once in a while, you hear that.
There may be a dozen that are shot every. We actually this year I got on the Mississippi River too, and we had a lot of speckle bellies coming through this year.
They're the best eating.
They're
the best wild game eating I've ever had.
Ever?
Yeah, they are good.
Well,
all of them.
Kudu's pretty amazing.
Oh, so that gator was pretty amazing.
Gator's fantastic. I don't know. Food's my favorite dish, so I can't decide. So when you're heading out here. Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to shock people. I have never killed a snow goose.
What?
I'm telling you.
You kill everything else.
I have never, ever really targeted snow geese.
Yeah.
And you're a guide. Yeah, I know. I know guys.
I know a guy.
But it's really a hit or miss type of hunt, isn't it?
It can be. I mean... The reason that I switched down to just hunting Arkansas now is, you know, I actually started guiding snow geese. That's the first thing I ever started guiding is snow geese. I started, you know, helping other people out at probably 18 years old. Went off on my own a few years after that. And, we used to hunt Missouri, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, stuff like that.
I was going to say, North Dakota is probably where I would think the snow goose population would be.
Yeah, but more majority. I mean... Instead of hunting migrators, you know, trying to cut them off and stay with them, we hunt them now where they winter. So the geese winter down in Arkansas.
That's true.
And, you know, you have a bigger population.
So you're hunting local populations almost. Like we kill so many Canadas here because we're hunting local populations.
I mean, they don't live there year-round, but they're wintering there, obviously. So it's, we hunt feed fields every day. I hunted migrator spreads, you know, for many, many years, and that's just not my style.
It's hit or miss.
I mean, it's you're picking a date on a calendar, on a spot, on a map, and hoping that the birds or the game is there, which 99% of the time, how you hunting doesn't work that way, you know?
Yeah.
We've switched to chasing feeds every day, so we hunt a new field every single day, you know, so then we've had our best success, you know, doing that. So, you know, we did shorten our season up a lot more now that... we're doing that. We only run about a month now down there, instead of, you know, 2.5-3 months chasing them all the way to the, you know, North Dakota. But, it's definitely improved our success throughout the years of doing it that way. So,
and we're heading up against a break already, but we're going to talk about that when you get back, because I think one of the toughest things about being a guide or an outfitter is the pressure there is to succeed. And everybody has a different definition of what a successful hunt is.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I do know is when you pay money to hunt, you have very high expectations.
100%.
And for somebody in the snow goose industry or for somebody who's waterfowl industry, like you said, when you pick a date and the person says, I'm going to be there on that date, you could have the week ahead of time just crushing the waterfowl. Yeah. And then 2 days ahead of time, there's a cold snap and they're gone.
Yep.
Or a warm snap and they're gone.
Yep.
So I want to talk when we come back about the difficulty of planning for that type of thing. And you said you're chasing feeds, which is an answer, I think, to that. We chase feeds here in Wisconsin. You're listening to Race in Wisco. We've got Jacob Caprillion with us from Epic Guide Service. Danielle Fairman, of course, who has left the majority of the show so far. I'm glad we can be of that service. I'm Joel Clayfish. We'll be right back.
Blame it all on my roots. I showed up in boots and ruined your
Danielle.
Blind tie affair.
Okay, maybe,
this is what happened when you were gone too.
Either sing or laugh.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back to Raised in Wisconsin, 540 AM, WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw. Jacob Caprillion from Epic Guide Service is here with us today. And, man, there's so much to talk about. We just ended up talking right through the commercial breaks and coming back. But you're talking about, when we went into the break, I said, I want to talk about some of the pressure on a guide, which is one of the reasons you said you're chasing feeds. Explain to people what chasing feeds means versus out there with, you know, 700,000 decoys trying to catch migrators as they go from place to place.
Chasing feeds is probably a stupid idea, to be honest with you. It's 10 times the amount of work as setting a migrator spread. But, I mean, like you said, I mean, the pressure of performing every single day after a three-day hunt, you know, your next group comes in, those guys go out, they're tired, and you got to put a happy game face on for the next group. And, yeah, I mean, they expect 110% every single day, and that's kind of why we switched over to that is just, you know, I mean, you can only do so much. You can put yourself in the right situation, in the right area. I mean, but wildlife's wildlife, and I have people ask me, do you guarantee this? Do you guarantee that? I don't guarantee nothing. I mean, that's just the way it is. And if they're looking for something guaranteed, I tell them to go with somebody else. I said, I'll promise you I'll work the hardest and, you know, put everything in our field that we can. But, you know, I mean, if your clients don't understand them, you don't want them as your clients anyways. So.
And they book like months in advance too, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, most guys book a year in advance or so.
You book, then all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, I hope it's this weather next year. But as it shows right now, there's no snow on the ground.
Yeah.
So but you hope it's changes. A certain weather. You hope that the birds are in their migration path or they haven't left. Because, I mean, you're hunting the birds where they winter.
Correct.
So you're hoping they're still there.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's time. I mean, my clients, I don't tell them to book hotels until, or, you know, VRBOs or whatnot, until I'm down there and get everything situated that I know things are on track. I also talk to all my local farmers, you know, in the off season and stuff. So I kind of got a good idea of what's going on before I even get down there. But yeah, I mean, there's times where I might call them and say, hey, we're going here instead. And that's snow goose hunting. If you've ever hunted snow geese, you know that they're here today, gone tomorrow. You know, but like you said, where we hunt, they're wintering down there. There's plenty of food. There's plenty of water. And those birds are, you know, especially the younger birds that aren't sexually mature yet, they're going to stay around for as long as they can. So they're not in a hurry to get north.
And when you say you're chasing feeds, you want to hunt the X.
Correct. Yep.
I mean, migrator spreads and the way a lot of people hunt, just to fill you in a little bit, the way a lot of people hunt snow geese is they're on a migration pattern where they know the birds are going to be flying at 30,000 feet and hopefully see this massive spread of decoys and are entertained by it and come down to feed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You're scouting feeds.
Correct.
I would say that's 90% of how successful hunters in Wisconsin hunt Canada geese.
100%.
That's what we do. We want to hunt the X. Mm-hmm. So you scout and scout and scout. You put the miles on, and when you find a field with a ton of geese in it, you pull up the old Onyx, and you go knock on the door and ask the farmer for permission to hunt it. And that's the kind of thing you're doing. Do you ever get any jerks? You ever get some people who are jerks? And
yes.
Just no matter how hard you work, that's not good enough?
Most of those, like as clients or as landowners?
Landowners have every right to be a jerk with their own property. So let's go with the clients.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I do. And normally it's a newer group. My clients, I'd say 90% of my clients are repeat, maybe more. You know, I mean, most of them have become good friends throughout the years.
Well, that says a lot about you, and that says a lot about your outfit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, which is great. You know, it's fun seeing everyone year after year. But, you know, like I said, normally if you get people that are going to complain or whatnot, it's going to be newer guys with unrealistic expectations. I pretty much try to set things straight from the beginning. Like I said earlier, there's no guarantees in hunting, but, you can do everything possible and, get everything right. And at the end of the day, it's up to the birds what they want to do. But most of those guys, they can see, you know, whether you're hunting hard, if you're lazy, if you're, you know, moving stuff around, changing stuff up. And, it shows in your work ethic. And, most of those guys are, like I said, you don't want them as your clients anyways. So, they can go with someone else as far as I'm concerned.
And most of the people who are coming, I mean, they're out for the camaraderie of it. A lot of people. So this was struck me over the break. I thought of this. You get a lot of people who are seasoned hunters. And then a lot of times those people bring people who may have never hunted before in their life.
Yep.
So do you have to be real careful about safety in those scenarios?
Yep. We kind of go through, you know, morning safety checks, I guess, if you would call it that way. We always double check everything. There's times I'm telling people, hey, your safety's off or, you know, whatever. If you're going to get up, you got to take a shell out of your chamber. You know, we always stovepipe one. Everyone can see your guns visible. We have dogs. My number one rule is if you shoot my dog, I shoot you. And then people laugh. And then I go, no, I'm serious.
Don't shoot Jacob's dog.
No, dogs are, you don't do that.
They're worth their weight in gold out there.
Oh, man.
They?
Yeah, they saved my butt. So, safety is a big, knock on wood. And, you know, been thankful that we've never had any incidents that, have ever injured someone or anything like that. But, when you're working around firearms on a daily basis, it's definitely a possibility and we take it very serious. There's times where, I've had some pretty heart to heart conversations with some people that are a lot more powerful than me and almost put them on a timeout before and they, and they don't like that, but hey, it's my boat or it's my field or, whatever. And it is what it is. And I'm not going to jeopardize someone else's, safety for that. So
that's good.
And you're guiding the snow geese and then you're guiding fishing.
And then duck hunts, in Wisconsin also. So
why don't you do duck hunts in Arkansas, like the flooded timbers and stuff? Cause I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I grew up hunting the Mississippi River and
he's got a pattern that's working. He's got a plan that's working so far.
I just would love to do flooded timber.
No, flooded timber's
nobody,
funny.
Well, I didn't ask you, obviously, but like the girls that want to go on trips with and everything, nobody has any inkling to do that whatsoever.
I think that'd be cool.
It is. I've done it several times. It's very hard to hit correct, though. I mean, you got to, I mean, it's tough. It's very fun and unique and completely different than the style that we hunt.
Yeah, you just got a handful of decoys in the middle of some, and you're hoping whatever ducks come over see those decoys and dump through the trees in front of you.
Yeah, it's pretty unique, but it's fun, yeah. But, the Mississippi River is a great place to hunt ducks, and, we specialize in shooting canvasbacks out there, and a lot of people are coming to hunt with me to shoot canvasbacks, and, the amount of canvasbacks that we hold is pretty incredible. So
I'm down for that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome too. That really does. And when you're out there, what's that feeling you get when you get that first time hunter or the person who's never shot a canvasback or if they've never shot a snow before, they've never caught a big fish before and they're with you? Because that's one of the things that I don't think people understand about guiding or outfitting. You get to see a lot of firsts.
Mm-hmm.
What's that feel like to you when that kid or frankly that adult who's new to hunting or fishing gets that first trophy and you're the one in the boat next to him or in the field next to him?
I get asked a lot because when we hunt on the Mississippi River, we're not allowed to shoot. I can't carry a gun. I can't shoot as a guide. So people really? Will always ask you, don't you get bored sitting in the boat watching other people shoot? And exactly what you just said is what keeps you going. That smile on that person's face is you've hunted all over the world and ever, you know, doing all kinds of stuff. And we take a lot of stuff for granted that I've seen, you've seen, you know, most avid hunters have seen. And, you know, getting to show people that, whether it's fishing, hunting, you know, snow goose hunting, whatever. I mean, that's kind of what, if you don't get excited about that, you shouldn't be a guide. You know, I mean, that's just the way it, in my opinion, you know, that's what keeps me going is watching a kid smile or a grown man smile like a kid, you know, catching a 30-inch walleye or shooting their first, you know, I've had people that have hunted all over the world that have never killed a canvasback before that are, you know, 50, 60 years old. And here they come, they shoot their first canvasback. And I mean, it's like shooting.
I've never shot a canvasback.
So yeah, I neither mean, think of the smile on your face when you kill your first big bull canvasback that you get to put on your wall. You know,
they're just beautiful.
But yeah, that's kind of the driving thing that keeps you going, and you know, makes you get up. You know,
that is a conundrum for me because one of the reasons I travel, I love traveling to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's in the United States or in another country, I love to travel to hunt because I consider the experience as important as the hunt and as enjoyable as the hunt. But I don't usually travel to hunt waterfowl because we have such good waterfowl hunting here in Wisconsin. And I love shooting those green beans and I love shooting the long necks like Cheeto feet and Tostito feet.
And green beans.
I just love hunting Wisconsin, and I get so much waterfowl hunting here that I feel like to travel to do it, if I'm going to spend money and travel somewhere, I'm going to hunt a species I can't hunt here. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, you're naming these species. There's so many species I have yet to hunt in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Even I have not shot any long tails. Now, I don't know if I ever have the guts to go on a layout boat on Lake Michigan.
Oh,
have you
definitely
done it,
Danielle? Not on Lake Michigan, but where did we go? Up by Green Bay area, we hunted out layout boats.
Yeah.
That was definitely an experience. You're right there.
Oh, yeah. Is it scary?
That water, when those high enough waves, they come in there.
You got to time it right to shoot the duck and not the wave.
Yep. And then all I think about is I'm wearing my waders because all the water is coming in. And if I tip, I'm gone. I am definitely gone.
Everybody says like, oh, well, Joel, you hunt alligators. Why would that scare you? Nothing frightens me more than a cold, watery death.
Yeah.
And I was a lifeguard. I can swim like a son of a gun. It's not the swimming. It's the freezing.
Oh, yeah.
It is the hypothermia and dying within 15 minutes if you're in that water. I've got friends. Todd Schaller, the former DNR warden, who is a very DNR chief warden, who's a very dear friend of mine. He's always like, man, I got to get you out there. And I don't know what it is, but I am just deathly afraid to get in a layout boat.
It's a unique experience. It's fun though.
But you can hunt those from shore. You can hunt those shore.
Yeah, on certain areas.
You're not going to have as much success, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But for the waterfall association, isn't there 44 different types of waterfall?
41.
41.
North American waterfall species.
Yeah. In Wisconsin.
North America.
Oh, North America. Gotcha.
Yeah, correct. I have that pinned up in my spare room.
Yep.
Initialing every single one I get, if it's a hen or if it's a drake or not.
How many have you crossed off?
About 14.
Wow, that's pretty 15? Good. That might be more than me.
Yeah.
That might
hopefully get out to New York and shoot grants.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
That's what my, and Old Squaw with Mike Keller, so.
I'd like to shoot. Yeah,
going to be doing that soon.
Well, Keller's one of the people that I, you know, that bugs me about going. But I have to be, he's an old Marine. I mean, he once a Marine, always a Marine. And I'm afraid I'd be out there and I'd be like, I'm freezing.
Man
up. I'm scared.
I would do that.
I'm scared, Mike. And then he'd put on his, like, you know, his chevron face and be yelling at me, button up, soldier. Grant for a ride. And it became over with Mike Keller. That's what scares me. But man, he is unbelievably successful though. They some of the beautiful ducks they shoot. What's your favorite thing to hunt, Jacob?
Probably elk.
Elk?
Yeah.
Something
where did
you don't
get an elk?
Guide.
Yeah. We go to Idaho.
Nice.
Have you been successful with a bull elk?
I have, yes. Yeah.
One, two?
I've killed one in 3 years.
Wow, that's actually very good odds for a big bull, 5x5, 6x6.
6x6 broke off, so it was a 5x5. But yeah, it was a mature bull. But yeah, we do archery hunts out there. That's my
That's an over-the-counter tag, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's tough.
It is very tough, but that's my one time to. I don't get to do too many hunting trips, you know, for fun anymore with my buddies, you know, since I guide so much, but that's one of my favorite trips of the year.
Do you think I am physically fit enough to do that trip?
Not right now, no.
What? That wasn't even like, that was like 2 seconds. Absolutely.
Do you think I'm physically fit to
do that? I thought he was going to say, even Kelvin's laughing at me. Kelvin, do you deny my physical prowess and fitness?
No. Okay, wait. I don't know. I'm not saying I could do it either.
Yeah.
Wow. He said he's not even physically fit for it yet, fit for it.
I thought he was going to say absolutely.
Absolutely. I feel like you just challenged. He like white glove challenged me.
We got to go to the break. 10 seconds. Obviously, Caprillion thinks I'm fat. We'll be back.
Almost heaven.
5:40 a.m. WAUK 101 FM, The Shot. That is the home of Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman and Bandit.
Take me home.
The dog who's joining us today. Jacob Caprillion's here from Epic Guide Service, and we're talking about all the things he chases around the country. And, you know, I said, what's your favorite thing to hunt? Thinking it was going to be one of the things that he hunts on a regular basis, and he pulled out elk and told us how he just about kills himself in Idaho with a bow in his hand, packing out a 2,000-pound elk for 5 miles, which to me, no offense, is a gigantic no thank you. I would love to have the elk on my wall, but packing it out 5 miles. What do you have to make? Three trips? Four trips?
Four trips is comfortable. Or one trip with four guys is comfortable. But, yeah, it depends on the size of the elk and if you're getting it mounted or just, you know, like a European mount or whatnot. Because you shoot one, you know, I mean, then you got another 60, 70 pounds of hide and horns and head.
Do you have to know how to cape for a mount if you're going to do that? Because, yep. I mean, if you're out there, it's not like you're bringing the hide back on the animal.
Correct. No, you got to have everything out of the skull, you know, legally to cross state lines and all that good stuff. So
everything at what? Mm-hmm.
So how did you, I mean, does everyone have to kind of become like a makeshift taxidermist?
Pretty much. I mean, there's no one else to rely on. You got to go figure it out. Basically, you know, if you don't know how to do it, you just make it work. So
do you just practice on just regular deer here? On bucks here?
Well,
how do you
never really practice?
I just did it for the first time on the big
elk. What did you do? You just like cut up right up the chin and just like back?
Start back, and you know, normally you keep in a little bit of extra, and then you just work your way out. The hardest part are the eyes and the teeth and nose and all that
and
good stuff.
And you just take it off
but
like a
shirt? If you don't do a good job, then your taxidermist will yell at you anyway. So they can fix a lot. I mean, a good taxidermist can make pretty much anything
no
look good.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, Kyle has fixed some blemishes that I've brought him before over at Northwoods Taxidermy. I mean, one time he asked me if I was having like a sword fight with one of the animals. Did you have a sword fight before you cape this baby out? I don't think people understand when you do that kind of hunt, when you're off on your own in the mountains, in the middle of nowhere, you shoot this animal toward dark or toward dusk, and you've got 4 or 5 hours of butchering, I mean, gutting and quartering and caping ahead of you. And there are wolves, bears, around you, predators around
mountain
lions who can all smell that. And you're sitting by yourself 5 miles in the dark, in the cold. In the snow.
Makes you feel alive.
What about getting lost? I feel like I would get lost.
The GPS stuff is much better these days.
But Onyx is hard to screw up.
But I'm telling you, man, what if your phone's dead?
Yeah, I was going to say, my phone dies every single day.
I carry a solar pack with me, but yeah, you never know.
But have you ever had to camp out there overnight? Have you ever had to say, all right, I'm sleeping under a tree? No, you make it back in the dark.
We've always made it back, yeah.
Dang. See, I don't think people understand the tumultuous nature of once you kill something.
Yeah, that's when the work begins.
If you're a responsible ethical hunter, you're going to take care of that meat and take care of that game before you get back. So that's very important.
Yep.
I have to talk. We talked a little bit earlier about the experience of somebody who gets their first animal or their first big fish or something like that. And I want to tell you, Robin Kennedy, who is a good friend of yours, Danielle, I took her son, Aiden, turkey hunting. He's never, ever killed an animal. In fact, he never fired a gun before we took him turkey hunting. And so he's a mentored hunter, took him on a mentored hunt, took him out three times, saw turkeys each time. They didn't want anything to do with us. Fall hunt, so it's tougher to get him into decoys and stuff. And so finally I take him out, and we're sitting there, and I watched these to the roost the night before. We set up, we got our decoys out. They start flying out, and I'm talking like 80, 90, 100 turkeys flying, and they all flew over our heads.
That's like pretty sweet.
Past the decoys to like 400 yards out in the middle of the field. The day before, they flew out right to where we were. They walked in right where we were. And then, of course, when we're hunting them, they flew over my head 300 yards to the middle of the field. And I'm like, they were onto us. I don't know if they didn't like the blind. I didn't know if they heard crunching walking in to set up. Mm-hmm. We were in an hour and a half early. So awesome. I did everything I could to make to try to get this kid, young man, a turkey. And so I am absolutely deflated. We're facing forward, facing the roost. I had watched where they walked out, walked in, the whole schmear. The kid's... I keep saying the kid. He's a young adult. He's with me every day, every hunt. We're out there, an hour and a half before dawn, putting in the effort, putting the decoys out, getting ready on the pattern, on everything. And these things fly over our head. I'm watching out the little side crack of the blind. They're 300 yards away, and they're walking the other way. They were onto us. They knew what was going on. They wanted nothing to do with it. They didn't like the decoys. They were onto us. Now, they weren't running off, so they weren't totally onto us, but they didn't like something. Well, they're, no joke, 90 to 100 birds in this rafter of turkeys. Did you know that that's what a group of turkeys is called? A rafter.
Huh. Mm. That's fun.
Learn something new
every
day.
Do you know what a bunch of pigs is called?
Bacon.
We're going to stick with bacon. I like that. Danielle. So all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I hear,
what are the pigs called?
It just, now that you ask me, it just slipped my mind. I'll think it'll come to me while we're talking.
It will.
A group of pigs is called a starts with an S, I think. I don't remember. So we're facing the roost. They fly over my head and all of a sudden I hear, yer. It's like a chirping, and I turn around, and there's a little 1-inch hole in the back of the blind, and I put my eye through it, and there's one bird out of the 100, one came in to challenge the decoys. So now we're facing the opposite way. I got to get Aiden turned around and then try to unzip this without this turkey splitting on us, and the decoys were 10 feet away from us.
Oh, Lordy.
And this bird just stayed there. Until I zipped the hole out, I said, get the pin on it. You know, I had a red light. I said, get the red light, lower neck, squeeze it till it surprises you. I'm going to take your safety off now. Are you ready? And I'm looking at him, and he's just like, you know, all the excitement.
Wow. Uh-huh.
I said, just as soon as you're ready, you slowly pull the trigger till it surprises you. Boom. Flattens it. We make turkey pot pies.
Yay!
He gets his first bird. I'm telling you what, it changed this kid. Fundamentally changed him.
I believe
changed
it.
His life. And do you ever notice, either one of you, when you take your first hunter, when they kill something, they don't jump up and down or scream. They look right at you. Because they want you to tell them it actually happened. It's the most exciting feeling in the world. And that's what we bring you on Raised in Wisco. Jacob Caprillion, Danielle Fairman, co-host, good friend. Awesome to have you along. You've been listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. Check us out on our podcast, WAUK. We'll be back next week.